the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line. Way back in.
Welcome back in. We are hanging out on some high top chairs. You can't see it, but
they're great.
They're great and they're new. I'm Dani Wexelman next to Ashley Chavez and Gemma Kaneko.
What's up?
Welcome to Walk It Off. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Welcome. You just did.
You said.
Welcome to Walk It Off.
Now.
Welcome back.
It. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Once, twice, who cares?
Now everybody
welcome.
Knows.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we didn't do this last week, but this week we've got to update the medal count. So the United States, as of Wednesday morning, 84, China 51, and Great Britain 50.
USA.
USA. Go away, Russia. Go away, Russia.
Whoa.
Yeah. Cheaters.
So.
Okay, Lily King.
All right, we're going to bring it back. There's obviously been a million different great storylines. Simone Biles, the women's gymnastics team, breaking records, doing great things. Simone Biles, I mean, and the whole Zac Efron.
That was so cute.
Adorable, meeting her crush.
Aww.
It was cute. It was nice,
love
you
her.
Know, because I forget that, you know, they're just like us, too. They have crushes. And
yeah,
they're
exactly.
not just all superhuman people. So yeah. Anything that's been sticking out to you guys?
Katie Ledecky is ridiculous. That's not even fair to the rest of the world. Just watching track now is so much fun. Watching like discus and stuff is amazing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we now have a gold medal there.
The hammer throw women are amazing.
This is great.
They're so cool.
Summer Olympics is so much better than
the
Winter
weightlifting
Olympics.
Woman, the United States woman?
Yes.
Who
bronze.
Was like screaming as she finally did it.
Champion.
And I like didn't want to cry, but I was like kind of like, oh my God. Like she's so happy to even get any medal.
Yeah.
I get
you know?
So emotional when I watch any
Dude.
Olympic sport.
Oh, no,
ever.
Seriously.
I like the Winter Olympics, though. I like all Olympics.
I do like the Winter Olympics.
I like all of them.
But when it's summer, when Summer Olympics are going on, it's just like, oh, my God, this is the absolute best. I love it so much.
Yeah, so there's still a little bit more to come. They're not quite over yet. But
yes. So
next week we'll finish up that conversation.
We still have rhythmic gymnastics.
What even is that?
Is the best yet to come?
There are cool things that you did in PE class. That
think
you could have potentially
coming,
been an Olympian if you paid attention to ribbon dancing.
Anything that's coming could top what we've seen so far?
Something in track and field. Like maybe men's 200. And that's,
yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe if Usain Bolt breaks his own record. That
yeah,
would
exactly.
Cool.
Exactly.
Which he wants to do.
He would
so.
Do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What he says, he does. So let's get right to it because we have Chris Mosier on the phone with us. Chris, hi, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm having a great Wednesday. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Of course. So we're going to jump right in because I know there's so many things that we want to talk to you about. I think that you are the most interesting man in the world. And you also just became a part of the You Can Play project, which we are a big fan of. You are the Vice President of Program Development and Community Relations. You are so involved in so many different aspects in sport and community. And that's kind of what this portion of our show is about, is spotlighting somebody who's making major contributions in both. And so I'm wondering, how have sports, this is a big question, how have sports shaped you into the person that you are today?
That's a great question. That's one of my favorite questions, actually, because I think every piece of who I am today as a person goes back to early involvement in sports. I really think that participating in group sports when I was starting off at like 4 or 5 years old is where I started to get the foundations of what I think I define my values and how I interact with the world, really. So, anything like dedication and teamwork and goal setting, leadership skills, working with others, all of these great parts of life and how I operate and work with others really goes back to the earliest days of playing t-ball in the neighborhood. I think all of that, and that's really why I feel so passionately about the work that I'm doing now, particularly in working with high schools to try to get them to have more inclusive policies, specifically for trans students, but also for lesbian, gay, and bisexual students, is because I think that every young person should have that experience and that opportunity to get those values that I feel were so instrumental in creating myself into the person that I am today.
That's a great answer. And I also would like to know, you've broken barriers, you've paved the way, you've broken stereotypes, you've done the whole nine yards when it comes to you. And you talk a lot about not being defined by these words and these names, but I want to know, and you talked about being defined by the word athlete, but what else are you defined by?
Oh, wow. You know, I would say if I had to summarize how I want other people to talk about me, maybe that's the best way to answer this question, is I would want people to say I am a hard worker. For whatever reason, from my Midwestern upbringing, just a good work ethic is one of the most important things to me. And so, you know, I want people to know that I work really hard, and that's something that I value a lot. And so I think that there's not really labels that I have to go with it, but that idea of being a hard worker is really important to me.
And my last question for you is, what do you say to someone who says that maybe it's not fair that you are competing with women? You know, in this whole situation, I'm sure someone has said to you, it's not fair, or said to another trans athlete, it's not fair. Well, what do you say to that person?
Yeah, you know, I'd say, you know, first of all, we need to remember trans women are women, right? And so this is not, there's no issue of men competing with women because trans women are women. And so that's the first thing that we need to wrap our minds around. You know, the whole idea about trans athletes competing and competitive equity is that we just need to understand that that things are regulated at the elite and the professional level. You know, with hormones, there's regulations to prevent people from. I think the big fear that people have, right, is that. Exactly what you said, right, that a man is going to compete with a woman. Because really, nobody cares if I'm competing with men. As a trans man, people were like, yeah, cool, go for it. And then I started to win, and people were like, cool, great. You know, it's not really a big deal. Like, I actually get congratulated where I know, you know, trans women, even the idea of a trans woman competing in the Olympics right now caused hysteria, right? Like, it's like, so I think that we need to remember first and foremost that this is not a matter of men competing with women. Trans women are women. And so, you know, I think that we're going to see evolving research and more information about hormone levels, which is what most people base competitive equity off of, and just how that plays in for trans women. You know, we haven't seen a case of a trans woman going in and dominating in sports, which is really what the fear is, right? Yeah. And so it just hasn't happened. And so I think that once we get over this idea that someone is trying to get a competitive edge, then we'll start to see a little bit more fairness and a little bit more humane treatment of trans athletes, particularly trans women in sports. And I'll say this too, that no one is transitioning to gain a competitive advantage, because what trans people face in the rest of their lives, you know, doesn't offset glory and victory on a playing field. It just doesn't. So that's not something that folks are doing to try to get a competitive advantage.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I definitely think that's something that a lot of people are just, they just decide, I don't want to look at the reality of this. I want to look at some nuts idea that someone is changing their entire life just for an award, like you said. Yeah. That's nuts. Yeah, this is Ashley, by the way. Hello, Chris. Thank you so much for being on the show. I want to take it back a little bit. After you realized your gender identity, when did you decide that you wanted to transition to being a male, and how did you prepare your body to compete at the highest level?
You know, I didn't really understand the label. And we go back to the labels and terminology, and I've always felt like me. And so it wasn't until I found out about transgender identity that I was like, oh, maybe this is actually a good description of what I've been feeling inside. And so, you know, that didn't happen until I was 29 years old. And so I went through, you know, everything before that just kind of feeling like myself but not having the words to kind of put to that. So you know, sports definitely played into my thoughts about transition, and then in terms of prepping myself and, you know, prepping my body for competition, nothing really changed. I mean, the part of my switching categories as a trans athlete was as soon as I took my first shot of testosterone, I competed with men because that's where I should have gone, right? That's the category that I felt I belonged in. And also taking testosterone, I had to get a medical clearance for that. So I had to get approval to take testosterone, which is a performance-enhancing substance, and still be able to compete. And so got that, and then had switched categories. And so everything else for me was really the same. You know, I did the same, you know, workouts and the same sort of preparation for my races. And I think the mental piece is probably what switched for me. And so when I felt more comfortable in my races, in my training, you know, lining up with men at the starting line, even if there wasn't a huge physical difference for me, you know, I felt more comfortable there. And I think that that sort of evolved over time, that I started to gain that confidence, and also had heard other people say it's not possible for me to compete with men, right? So being raised and socialized as female, and in our society, we have certain expectations that we place on women in sports of, you know, very sexist ideas that women are not as good as men and cannot be as good as cisgender men. And so, you know, I started to hear that no one really thought that I would succeed. And I think that's really mentally what pushed me. It wasn't so much a change with my body, but, you know, that sort of mental idea of, all right, now I have something to prove. now I want to succeed, not only because I'm a competitive person, but also because I'm very motivated by proving other people wrong.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, it's funny because you don't really think of it as actual mental game. You think of it as all physical, and all the hurdles that you have to face are physical. What would you give, what advice would you give to other trans athletes that are trying to get in, as far as like jumping over these mental hurdles? Because maybe, you know, not everyone's as motivated as you are to get through them.
Yeah, you know, I'm hoping that people, you know, read my story and see my Nike commercial and say, you know, if he can do it, I can do it too. And that's really what it is, because I think there's such a powerful piece of visibility, right? Visibility is such an important tool for social change, and to see it is to believe it, right? So now people can see a trans man competing with men after a medical transition and know that it is possible. And I think that's something that I was really questioning before I transitioned, was I don't have anybody to look to, anybody to say, yeah, this is possible. I hope that by being so out and visible, people can look to me as that example. You know, my sort of advice for trans athletes who are trying to do this is just to keep pushing, because we are capable of more than any of us think that we are. I think it's really just tapping into that mental piece of allowing yourself not to be held back by other people's expectations of you. And that's really, I think, what a lot of trans folks struggle with in general. Certainly in my transition, I worried more about how other people would react than about my own feelings about it. You know, if I didn't have to deal with anybody else, I probably would have transitioned much earlier.
That's great. Thank you so much for that.
So you were talking about social change, and in the Rolling Stone profile that came out of you earlier this month, you said that it was important to you that athletes like represented this idea of social change to you, that those were your heroes growing up. So what steps do you think you'll continue to take in the future? Why is this important to you that athletes such as yourself, or really any other athlete who has a cause, speak out?
I mean, athletes are most certainly role models, whether an athlete wants to be or not. Just athletes have such great social capital in our society. And even, you know, I think back to my high school experience, the people who were thought of as the leaders, the cool kids, were the athletes. And I think that's true of much of America. And so, you know, I think that we have a responsibility to use that platform for good, for social change. I certainly feel like I have a platform that many people do not have. And I also have the safety and comfort in my being out. So, you know, I'm about to work for an LGBT sports organization. You know, I'm not worried about losing my job because I'm trans. You know, I have a great partnership, and you know, I know that my wife will support me no matter what, so I'm not worried about losing my relationship. You know, I'm in a good place, and so I can use this opportunity to share information and share my story in hopes to make that change. I just think it's so important because I think that, you know, again, back to that role model piece, that I didn't have that role model when I was younger, and that's, you know, I want to be the person that I needed 10, 15 years ago. And I think that's really, it's really come to light after the Nike commercial that, you know, folks have seen that in prime time. And I'm getting messages from 10, 15-year-old, you know, trans kids, from trans parents of trans kids, from allies, you know, saying how impactful it's been, how it's opened up conversations with someone's 90-year-old grandfather and somebody's 8-year-old son, you know, and just to talk about, you know, what does it mean to be trans? You know, so I think that, that it's such a great opportunity to really use that and leverage it so that more folks can see trans people succeeding.
Oh, absolutely. So with all these new conversations that are opening up and starting to happen, what does the future look like for you, either in this field for you specifically as an athlete or for the an ideal future maybe when these conversations have progressed a little bit across the years?
Totally awesome. The future looks totally awesome. No, I think that we're going to continue to make progress, you know, and my hope is that I can just continue to speak to folks, and you know, I'll definitely have the opportunity to do that through You Can Play, and get in with the right people, and going to high schools and talking with athletic director associations, talking to college conferences. I want to start to make policies better for trans kids. So I think you know, doing that at the high school level, that's how we're going to see young people succeed. That's how we're going to see a trans Olympian someday, right? So when we change high school policies, we're going to enable young kids to fall in love with sports and to continue to play. And so, you know, I want to make sure that everybody, back to the start of this conversation, has the opportunity to learn about themselves the way that I did through sports.
I hope everyone gets that opportunity too. That's just so great. Mm-hmm. Just really heartwarming overall. it really is. You're just great.
My warm and fuzzy state.
So what is the next step for you as an athlete?
So I am qualified. I'm on Team USA for the long course duathlon for next year. So I'll be competing in the World Championship in 2017. You know, had to make sure that that wasn't a one-and-done situation, so I locked it up for next year already. I'm going to do some fun races this fall and train my butt off over the winter. I'm going to come back as a even bigger beast next year and see what I can do. You know, I definitely feel inspired now. You know, if you have a commercial about you, you kind of got to bring it, you know? So I definitely feel like next year is going to be a great year for me. I can't wait.
We're excited to watch.
I know. Yeah. Chris, I have like 3 more questions. Do you have time for that?
Hit me up.
Okay. So I obviously want to know a little bit more about the role that you'll have with You Can Play. And we talked about them a little bit earlier this season and what they're doing in the hockey community, and just the amount of change and the barriers that they're breaking as well is kind of astounding.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I think what they do is such a great – You Can Play does a great job of getting into sports spaces and hitting not only – you know, they're not only speaking to LGBT athletes, but also to allies, coaches, teammates, right, and really really just making it accessible for people to understand what LGBT athletes face and how we are all teammates, you know. And that's the one of the great things about sports is that when you are on a field or on a court with somebody – everything else about them kind of goes away, whether you agree or disagree with any piece of them as a person, right, or what you know about them. All of that goes to the side when you are working towards that common goal of, you know, shooting a basket or, you know, scoring in some way. So I think that's a really powerful thing about sports. My role with them will be, as I mentioned, going into spaces and doing workshops and trainings. LGBT inclusion in general, but I certainly bring the expertise of the trans athlete piece, which I really think is going to be, you know, the next frontier, basically, for LGBT sports. Folks are really trying to understand And I think people are really trying to do right. I'd like to believe that most places really do want to get it right in terms of inclusion of trans athletes. So that's where I'm going to come in and help.
I think you're going to be a game changer.
I hope so.
But I don't have my own Nike commercials, so I'm not quite on the same level as you yet. But we talked a lot about you and kind of knowing that you always, wanted to be a man. But what advice, if you could give yourself at 10 years old, what would you say, going through what you were going through, what would you say to yourself?
Yeah, I think what I wanted to hear is just the reassurance that, and for any young person, you know yourself better than anybody else. I think kids have a really innate understanding of who they are as people at a very young age. And it's not until other people, mostly adults, step in and say, no, you're wrong. Little girls don't act like that. Or little boys don't do this. Or you shouldn't, you don't really like that. That we start to change our understanding of how we interact with the world. And so I think that was a very powerful thing for me to be, little girls don't wear their hat backwards. little girls don't skateboard, that sort of thing. All of the things that I was doing, I was told was wrong. And I think that made me, have certain feelings about myself when I was a kid. And certainly all of this is just hindsight and guessing. At the time, I wasn't like, wow, people are telling me that I'm wrong. I just kind of, as kids do, you just kind of take it and say, okay, well, I guess I shouldn't do that. So I think I would tell, myself that, you know who you really are, because now I'm the person that I was always meant to grow up to be.
That's pretty powerful. My next one is a little more obscure. I want you to describe what it's like when you're standing at the starting line of a race compared to when you're standing at the finish line.
Ooh, that's a great question. I think it depends on the race, and I would have described myself as sort of a nervous racer, probably up until this year. And it's kind of funny that the pressure for me to succeed, my self-imposed pressure, like I really wanted to make the national team, I really wanted to do well at the World Championship. I feel like I have a lot of visibility, so it's important for my results to reflect, that I'm worthy of having visibility. As my pressure sort of increased, my nerves decreased, which was really an interesting thing for me. At the beginning of the race, I try to just focus on controlling what I can control. You never know who else is going to show up to a race and what their training has been like and what their gifts are. And so I can't control anybody else's performance. I can just control my own. After the race, I think it's a sense of relief that it's done. And exhaustion, certainly, in most cases. But, I think I really enjoy that moment at the start of a race where it's just kind of a deep breath and the idea of, all right, let's do it. Let's go.
That's great. Is there anything that we didn't touch on? It's been a whirlwind for you. I can't even imagine what everything has been like and how proud you must feel, I think, that of yourself and what you've done and what you are doing and how you're paving the way for people who didn't have someone to look up to. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you'd like to say?
You asked some really awesome questions. I think I'm excited for us. I'm certainly proud, I think I've had an opportunity to take a couple of moments recently, and one thing in my growing up and before transition was that I didn't really celebrate my victories, and so even if I did well in a race, I didn't want to tell other people because my category didn't match how I felt, right? So I didn't want to say, yeah, I got, third place in the women's category. Like, that didn't feel like it fit for me. So I spent a long time not celebrating the victories that I had in my life, in sports and out. And I think that has really changed for me in the last year and a half, that I've been able to step back and say, this was really awesome. the Nike ad came on, and I saw it, and then I cried. And then I was like, that is really, really awesome. And it's... you know, I do have moments of being just really, really thrilled about it, but I'm really happy for us. I'm really happy for the position that I'm in to uplift, you know, the trans community in a lot of ways. And that sounds like a lot of responsibility, but it's self-imposed responsibility. You know, I think at the end of the day, what I try to remember is, you know, none of this is just for me. You know, I certainly want to race and be competitive and be awesome and all of that, but at the end of the day, the reason that I'm out, the reason that I am public and visible and so outspoken about it is because I really feel this deep desire to help trans athletes, you know, to help the LGBT community. And so I'm really excited because we are having a really awesome year.
Oh, man. You couldn't have answered that any better. And you have three super fans standing in your corner and everyone's corner. I can promise you that. And we're just so grateful for you and for talking with us and taking some time today.
So cool. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's time for Trend or Trash, one of our favorite segments. Yes. So let's jump right in. So we are deciding whether to trend or trash these topics. Usually they're socially driven and they're pretty popular on social media. So we're going to start with trending or trashing fans who hold athletes like Gabby Douglas. There's been a lot of things going on with Gabby Douglas in the Olympics to potentially unfair standards. And we talk about holding athletes to higher standards all the time on our show. So when they don't live up to your personal expectations, they go and voice them on social media and kind of tearing them down because they didn't live up to what you thought they should.
Sure.
So trend or trash that concept of fans tearing them down on social media when they're not living up to the expectation?
Well, trash.
Okay.
obviously trash. 1,000% trash. The best part about the Olympics is that you do become like a gymnastics expert every 4 years. You know, like you'll see like a flip and like a little hop and you're just like, oh no, that's going to be a tenth of a point. You know, like you get like super serious about it. But that's the extent of it. Like we can act like we know exactly what's going on right with the actual sport. We do not know mentally what these athletes are going through. Mm-hmm. We will have no clue ever unless we have been once an Olympian what these people are going through.
We will never know.
I will never know what it's like to train my entire life for this one event.
Unless they have like Summer Olympic blogging, which honestly,
I mean, even then,
not out of the question in like 40 years.
I mean, that's
very,
very
true. For you, Gemma.
Very, very true. Yes, gold goes to
no,
Gemma, but it will stay in the United States. That's all that matters. But to get on Gabby for not cheering the way that other people want her to cheer is insanity. Mm-hmm. To not allow her to be upset that she was not in this event doesn't mean that she's jealous or mad at her teammates. I'm sure she's happy for them, but she's probably a little upset that she's not there right now. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe she's just like spectating. That's how she watches things. Gemma. I don't know.
I trash this concept as well, just because I think that it's also, just specifically within gymnastics, sort of infantilizing because she's not like a tiny child anymore and isn't like cute and doing cute things. And now she's an adult who clearly just like cares about other stuff and is expressing her emotions the way an adult does and not a child. And I think people still want her to be a child.
Sure.
And it's very creepy and I don't like it.
That's true.
Just totally trash saying rude things about Olympians on the internet. Yeah. I mean, people will still do it. You can do that, but it makes you lame.
Yeah.
You're trash.
I'm with you guys. I think that people also look to them and maybe they think, oh, I want my kid to be like them, or, you know, I like some of the qualities that they have. And then they see them make, it's not even a mistake. Gabby Douglas hasn't even made a mistake. She hasn't done anything wrong. But, you know, to someone else's standards or someone who has too much time on their hands, she's not doing what they think she should do. And that's where the line is drawn. And that's where it's not okay. So, okay, our next topic, trend or trash the team that picks up Jonathan Papelbon, who asked to be released from the Nationals. Potentially, I saw on Wednesday morning that maybe Boston and John Farrell will welcome him with open arms. I saw some really nice video of him doing a little jig. So trying to trash the team that picks him back up.
Oh, trash. Trash.
Trash because?
That team. Because why would you bring a very cancerous person into your dugout, in your bullpen? Why would you do that? He does nothing but cause problems and just make everyone feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Multiple, like, there are multiple stories about it, and I won't go into it because that'll take literally a century. But why would you bring that guy into your clubhouse? You know who needs him? Who needs it?
I'm going to trend the team because I know they're going to trend anyway, but this doesn't mean approval for their decision.
Okay.
Just that I feel like whatever happens is going to be weird and I would like to witness it.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's so both of you are spot on. I'm going to trash as well. Let's trend or trash the NFL's punishment to the four players who are still being investigated with this whole Al Jazeera allegations of them using PEDs. And the punishment would be suspension indefinitely. Obviously, Peyton Manning, we recall, got cleared of all allegations.
Sure.
He also wasn't a player anymore when that happened. So there's kind of, it seems really tricky.
Yeah.
I'm going to trash the fact that these cases are being looked at differently and maybe not on the same page. And the NFLPA is, once again, you know, they're scrolling through their book trying to figure out what to do, and they're not doing the right thing. So trash for me.
I'm going to trend this because they're trying, and they're so bad at trying, I feel like. I mean, even that is bad. No, I appreciate the effort, so that's good. I don't know. I'm curious. I'm so curious. That's why I want this trend. I want to see how this goes.
Yeah, I wanted to trend too, just because I feel like we need more information about this. We should always just be talking about whatever the NFL's shady practices are, and they are so shady all the time, always. So why not just get more and more information on this and try to figure out why these two cases were handled differently and why some allegations were considered credible but not others?
Yeah.
If it seems to be coming from the same source. So, trend. Want to know
it's
more
messy.
Information?
It's really messy.
And
it's
I would reality hate, show. I would hate to see someone suspended indefinitely, and then it turns out that this wasn't even true. So I'd hate to see that. Okay, so trend or trash.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. Trend or trash, the Olympic hookup culture. So there was an article that came out. A guy went on Grindr and he kind of outed, not specifically names, but he gave away countries and heights and weights of the athletes who were on this website, this app. And it's, you know, there's a line. There's a journalistic line. And what did you gain? You got clicks. You got eyes. You got likes. What did you gain from writing this story and putting people in danger in countries that this isn't okay and this isn't legal?
Yeah.
Trash. 100% trash.
Trash that person. Like, I mean, it's already bad enough if you out someone. I mean, it's terrible to out someone not on their terms, but to a country where they can actually be murdered is insanity. Yeah. That's disgusting. Trash that person. Trend the hookup culture. This is like, the Olympics are like the most sexually charged event ever in the history of the world, and I think they should be able to do whatever they want to do. Good for them.
Condoms everywhere.
Yeah.
I agree with Ashley on every single point that she just said, because...
Yes. Gemini,
I know.
On everything
we rarely do, but this is the day.
Wednesday is the day.
I think it was also extremely irresponsible of the organization to allow that piece to run.
Yes, exactly.
Also because it's just another example of how a dominant cultural voice is still like kind of making a stunt out of LGBTQ people, which is unacceptable. Just saying that, like, oh, whoa, secret, this person's gay. Oh my God, like that's not scandal. That's a person's life that you're messing with.
Right, exactly. That's not journalism. That's not
news. It's not changing anything that this person could, about this person's athletic accomplishments. Like, it has absolutely nothing to do with sports or at all. So I think that's just grossly irresponsible. Blech.
Just in case you've missed everything that we've been talking about, this is Walk It Off, and we are talking trend or trash. We're back to the Olympics. Trend or trash, Shawnee Miller's track and field dive for gold, beating out Allyson Felix by 0.07 seconds.
It was nuts. Like,
.07.
Yes, it's insanity. I watched that live. It was amazing. I was sad Allyson Felix didn't win. I want her to win. But I'm going to trend this because that was so exciting. And also, like, you do what you have to do to get a gold medal. So, good for her.
Trend. I don't even understand how a person could be opposed to this. I really truly don't, because it's allowed. It's in the rules.
Right. If it's in the rules.
It. And it was also really weird and exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
It added something, because I feel like so many of these races that we've seen, especially the ones that get a lot of coverage, you see someone break away really quick.
Yeah.
And then you're like, all right, well, that's that.
It's done.
This was so tense.
Yes.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Dive away.
I agree. And I can see why, I could see why people would be not upset, but kind of like shaking their head, because you're supposed to be on your feet. You're supposed to be using your feet to win that race, not your whole body. But in theory,
so
it is your whole body. And and she did what she had to do. So
it was not, she did not break the rule.
It was ballsy and it was awesome. Yeah. Yeah. It was okay. Nice. So Trender Trash Anthony Rizzo for the greatest catch of the 2016 baseball season.
That's nuts. Trend the catch.
Okay.
But Hunter Pence's catch on the bullpen.
On
the
bottom.
Bullpen mound. Upside down like an insane person. Flailing. In San Francisco. Best catch of the year.
I will trend the catch because it was really cool.
Okay.
I will also say it is not the best catch of the season. The best catch of the season was Russell Martin's catch over the dugout railing. Also because you really thought he was going to eat it, and he did.
Dude,
he ended up on his feet.
He turtled that whole
thing.
It
was amazing.
Just like
yes.
Squirming around.
I'm gonna trend it as well because this isn't the first time he's done it. This is the second catch like this that he's
really?
Made. Yeah. It was not the first. He has
seen the first one.
You got to go back
you know
and
where
see
you
the
can
first
see it.
One.
Cut4.com.
Cut4.com. Cut4.com.
Check it out. Yeah. So this is the second time. And so I'm gonna give him that for this year.
Okay.
So far, but
okay.
I think that someone else can best him. With
okay.
that, I think the best is yet to come as far as catchers go because we haven't even gotten to late
sure.
September, and that's really sure. when the magic starts to happen.
Yeah, I'm nervous.
So that's going to do it for us today, but we have some really exciting news because the Little League World Series is wrapping up the weekend of the 26th, 7th, and 8th of August, so next week, and Gemma, Ashley, and myself will be there, and we will be talking to a lot of really cool kids, a lot of talented, impressive kids who hopefully we'll see one day in the big leagues. And we'll be shooting some video and some stories and some photos out there. So we will recap it all out there and we'll talk to you next week.
Now the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line.